Okay, so today's theme, as we know, is integration. Otherwise, I think this talk was entitled A Path of Wholeness. Feeling a bit unusually nervous, actually. I think that's partly because normally when I give talks, I'm in quite a bright, kind of inspired, full of energetic space. But I think I've been quite ill the last week, just with a cough and cold. But it's kind of left me in quite a more melancholic kind of space, actually. A kind of softer space in myself. So it's quite interesting kind of being here, thinking to give a talk from quite a different space, you know. I think actually partly because my chest is quite tender from this cold, and it's kind of leaving my heart area quite tender, a bit sore in a way. So it's quite interesting. So it'll be interesting what effect that has on this talk. And in a way, I think it's quite interesting. So when we think about integration, we think about classic way we talk about integration. Is bringing everything together, integrating, bringing everything together. So we can think of ourselves as a bundle of selves, and we're trying to integrate that bundle of selves, we're trying to bring them together. But I suppose what's quite interesting about the place I'm starting today, of kind of this place of tenderness, it's that reminder of, like, well, we like to bring some bits of ourselves together more than other bits of ourselves. So actually, this is quite an interesting place to start. In a way, it'd be a lot more comfortable to talk about bringing together all the bits, or talking about all the bits of ourselves that we like, that feel bright, that feel energetic, that feel open-hearted, feel loving. But there's also those bits of ourselves that, feel sad, tender, maybe angry, maybe irritable, or in pain. Yeah? That's also part of our experience. Yeah? So integration is about trying to bring all of that together. I like to think of it as that... it's that kind of the image, I think, for me, of integration is... of the bowl. So sometimes you see the Buddha carrying a bowl, which he used to get his food at alms put in. But that bowl is also, it's a symbol of, we're trying to become a bigger container. That's what I think integration is about, trying to become a bigger container. So that container is going to contain, ta-da, all of the parts of ourselves, so it's going to contain, pleasure and pain. It's going to contain a lot of, kind of neutral, boring bits of ourselves as well. Some bits aren't that interesting, are they? And that's life. So when we're talking about integration, we're talking about bringing together all those bundles of selves. So it's about being collected rather than dissipated. And it's about being unified rather than fragmented. But it's not about becoming homogenized. Yeah, so we're not bringing everything together into a bowl to blend it. Yeah, we're not trying to blend ourselves into one shape that we like, that's presentable for the world. We're trying to bring ourselves very gently, tenderly together into a unified container. But that unified container is holding all these different contradictory aspects of ourselves. Yeah, so it's not about trying to ignore the bits we don't like or homogenizing them into the bits we like. So it's shining a light of awareness into all aspects of our being. Being willing to look at everything about ourselves. So the bits we like, the bits we don't like. And it's also integration, in order to do this in a way, in order to be able to collect ourselves up and to be able to be with all the different parts of ourselves, we have to develop a fit mind. So that's a mind that is stable, and a mind that's positive. Because if we haven't got a mind that's stable and a mind that's positive, often what happens is that's why we get thrown around by all these different aspects of ourselves. We haven't got the stability and positivity or perspective to be able to be with ourselves here, in these different parts. So part of integration is gathering ourselves together into this container, and part of integration is about developing stability and positivity in our minds, so that we can hold, that we can hold and be with these different parts of ourselves. Another word talking about integration is talking about having one life. So rather than, being one person over here in one part of our lives and being another person over here in another part of our lives, yeah, is trying to have a sense of being one being, you know, with one set of values and, knowing what's at our heart, knowing who we are, and being that person in every situation to the best of our ability. So that's another way of thinking about integration, is about being one person. So if you are a practicing Buddhist, that might mean trying to being able to be in touch with what it means to you to be a Buddhist, so what those values are, which is often about awareness and kindness, yeah, quite simple, and ethics, but being able to carry that practice of awareness and ethics and kindness into all aspects of our lives, yeah, rather than thinking, oh, that's something I do at the Buddhist centre, or I do with my Buddhist friends, but the rest of the time, it doesn't really matter, I can do what I like. Yeah. So that's another way of thinking about integration, is trying to become integrated, that we have a sense of working towards being one being, one individual. So that's what Bantu would call, Sangharakshita, the founder of this community, would call becoming a true individual, is becoming someone who's stable and positive, but also can be a true individual in every situation, can carry that into every situation. It always reminds me of my friend, Vajradarshini. She had this story that she used to tell when I was on my... when I used to go on retreat with her, and she'd have this story of going to see her granny. And she'd go and see her granny, and her granny would say to her, hello, dear, how's your Buddhism? Like, as if Buddhism was this thing she kept in a drawer under her bed and that, like, kind of brought out and looked at it like some object, yeah? And, it always made me laugh. And I could kind of imagine, my grandparents had died, but I could kind of imagine them doing that, you know? So becoming integrated is about becoming one person, you know? And if you're a practicing Buddhist, it's like, well, how does that look like to be integrated, to carry that practice of the Dharma out into your life? And if you're not a Buddhist, it's as well, what are your core values that you're trying to carry out into your life? And can you keep a heart, keep a hold of in your heart, a sense of those values as you go out into your life? So that's a little bit about what is integration. Why bother? Yeah, what, why and how. So yeah, that's what it is. So why bother? I think when I was thinking about why bother be integrated, the word that most strongly came to mind to me was integrity. So integrity is really important to me, yeah? So that's the sense that that I can act with integrity, that when I meet you, or meet someone on the street, or meet someone in the supermarket, that I'm acting with integrity. There's a sense of integrity, yeah, which, you know, carries with it a sense of knowing what your values are and trying to live from those values. It's being able to follow through, isn't it? So the classic story, I think, Sangharakshita uses in his books when he talks about integration, it's a story which I'm sure all of us will relate to, So we go to bed at night and we think, I'm going to set that alarm for 7 o'clock because I'm going to get up and I'm going to do at least 2 hours meditation before I go and do anything else. That would be the best way to start the day. So that's the mind that we go to bed with. Of course, when the alarm goes off, you kind of, you change your mind, don't you? You think, actually, there's no way I'm getting up. I need another hour of sleep and, you know, half an hour meditation is probably fine and maybe 5 minutes if I'm lucky on the bus on the way to work. So, you know, this is, that's a classic example in a way of what we're like when we're in this kind of disintegrated state. It's this kind of sense of like having, you know, having these different parts of ourselves, yeah? And we all have different parts of ourselves. That's just how it is. So becoming more integrated, yeah, it's about coming into dialogue with all those different parts rather than trying to just give attention to the parts we like. So, yeah, so I think we practice integration because it allows us to be to stand up with integrity in the world. And I deeply believe we all want to stand up with integrity. Yeah, we want to. We feel good about ourselves, don't we? When we're upright and we're acting authentically with integrity. And we also aim to be integrated because it gives us choice. Yeah, it gives us a choice to. When we're aware of what's going on, we have choice. When we're not aware of what's going on, we don't have choice. We're just on autopilot, being thrown around by what's happening. So when we're practicing integration, we're practicing awareness, and through that practicing awareness, we have choice. I'm going to say a bit more about that in a minute when I come on to talking about awareness. And I also think there's something about integration which is a relief, yeah, which is a bit like what I was saying about the integrity thing. So there's a relief in just being honest about how you are, yeah? So maybe you are like full of energy and really happy, or like part of you is, and that's fab, and then maybe you're not. But however you are, there's a relief in being honest. Actually, sometimes I think there's just different challenges, actually. So when we're practicing integration, we've got to turn towards both our positive qualities. So how is it we shine in the world? Yeah, all of us shine in the world. All of us have that capacity to bring excellence into the world, to bring beauty into the world. All of us. But often we're afraid of doing that. Yeah, we're afraid of bringing our good qualities into the world. We're afraid of the world not liking us bringing our good qualities in the world. Maybe we've had experiences of that, you know, as children or adults, you know, where we've come in really excited about something or really brilliant at something and felt like that excitement or that brilliance has been not wanted or not okay. Yeah. So that was certainly my experience growing up. You know, sometimes there were things that I was, I was good at and that wasn't okay. And there's all those stories of kind of being too big for your boots or, you know, that sort of thing. It wasn't cool always to be brilliant, yeah? So I think there's a challenge there when we're practicing integration to be brilliant, to allow ourselves to be brilliant, and to support each other to be brilliant. There's not a quota of brilliance, yeah? You can all be brilliant. It's not that some of you can be and another one can't be. So that's also interesting to look at those views, yeah, around that sort of thing. You know, we can all be brilliant. And my brilliance is not going to diminish your brilliance. And your brilliance is not going to diminish anyone else's brilliance. So let's allow each other to be brilliant. Let's support each other to be brilliant. That's really one, that's what we've, you know, that's a really, really important function of friendships in the spiritual community, is to support each other to be brilliant. Yeah? To support each other to be as loving as we can be, as generous as we can be. Yeah? But let's also support each other to be as honest as we can be about what it is we find difficult. Yeah. So we need to turn towards what's painful in this world. So all of us experience pain. Yeah. Whether that's our physical pain or emotional pain, or the pain of those around us, or the pain of the world. A lot of pain just in the world, isn't there? There's a lot of suffering in the world, yeah? Politically, the migrant crisis, climate, the planet. There's a lot of pain out there. And then there's our own pain, our own emotional pain, our own physical pain, and the pain of our friends, our families. So we have to learn to be with that pain. And that's not always easy. But I suppose my path in the spiritual life has been a lot around working with suffering, yeah, and learning to shine as well. But I think, you know, both. I could say I'm learning both. But I think there's been a lot around, yeah, working with my own suffering, around my own physical health, or around the physical health around, of those around me that are difficult. And I suppose initially that felt like something I didn't want. I didn't want to have physical health issues, and it didn't feel fair, and I wanted someone to make it all go away. But actually now, I can honestly say that those problems to me are a jewel in a dung heap. They are what have enabled me to become who I've become, and I wouldn't be without them. So I suppose it's like having the courage to know that sometimes our pain is what will enable us to grow. So it's a grit in the oyster that makes the pearl. Yeah, it's that kind of analogy, yeah, that, and we all need a bit of grit, and most of us have got more grit than we want, quite frankly. So that grit is not a problem. We have more of it than we want, yeah. And sometimes that grit is really painful and really hard. And I'm not I don't want to trivialise the grit by saying that we grow through the grit. Yeah, the grit is hard. And in a way, yeah, I wish everyone was free from suffering, and I wish we didn't have to suffer. But the reality is there is pain in our lives. And that pain, well, we can keep pushing it away, but we can also use it as a tool to help us go deeper with ourselves, to develop compassion for ourselves. To develop compassion for others. So I'm going to read this little poem by David White. It's called The Well of Grief. Those who will not slip beneath the still surface of the well of grief, turning downwards through its black water to the place we cannot breathe, will never know the source from which we drink. The secret water, cold and clear, nor find in the darkness, glimmering, the small round coins thrown in by those who wished for something else. So, what gets in the way of us becoming integrated? Well, it's a kind of awareness, but it's an alienated awareness. So an alienated awareness is an awareness where we're very caught up in our mental proliferation. So what, in Buddhist terms, what we'd call prapancha. Prapancha just means mental proliferation. So what is mental proliferation? Now, all of us know what mental proliferation is, okay? So it's that state of mind that we're in where we're obsessing around things in our mind. So we're in storytelling mode. We're in the thoughts, we're in the stories, we're in our own views, we're just in a kind of mishmash, caught up or the thicket of our own stories, views and ideas, thoughts about the world. Maitreya Bandun is book calls us the YouTube channel of the mind. So those of you into YouTube will probably like this analogy, yeah. So he says, you know, it's like our minds are like our own YouTube channel. We have our own playlists, we have our own favourites, and you know, once we've done one story, there's a whole selection of other stories we could then move on to. I quite like that, and it's compulsive, isn't it? You move from one into the other, and you repeat that one. Oh, let's go back to that favourite story, I quite like that one. So, you know, so that's an image for the mind, and the YouTube channel of the mind. Yes, yeah, so our minds in this space, they're very distracted, perhaps are addicted to certain ways of thinking or certain kind of activities, compulsive. And they've got a certain flavour, haven't they, those stories in our minds. So I think, you know, through practicing awareness, which is obviously the fundamental ground of how we practice integration, we start to learn, don't we? You start to learn about the contents of the YouTube channel of our minds. We start to learn what our favourite stories are, what our favourite views are. And through through seeing that, we start to have choice. We start to have choice about whether we're going to press play or whether we're going to pause that little one and maybe have a little break from our screens. Yeah, do something different. Play a different song. Yeah, so mindfulness is how we develop integration. So in a way, we're moving from this more space of an alienated awareness where we're not really aware of what's going on in the body or what's going on with our feelings and our thoughts. And we're kind of just stuck in a very compulsive autopilot attitude with all of that, yeah? We haven't got a lot of choice. And what we're trying to move towards in integration is a more integrated awareness. So this integrated awareness is an awareness where we know what's going on. So awareness has basic foundations of the body, of our feelings. So feelings there in the sense of whether something is pleasant or unpleasant. Awareness of our emotions, so the more emotional tone of something, and our thoughts, yeah? So when we're aware of ourselves, we're aware of ourselves in those ways, aware of our feelings, body, feelings, emotions, thoughts. So as we're deepening our awareness, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get aware of what's going on in those different ways. So when we're developing mindfulness, so we integrate around the breath, don't we? We use the breath as a key tool for integration, yeah? So why do we do that? Why do we use the body and the breath to help us become more integrated? And it's because we need to make a journey, we need to balance our awareness out, yeah? We've spent a lot of time caught up in our stories, narratives, views, yeah, in our heads predominantly. And for a lot of us, it's obviously it's not true for everyone, but to generalise. So when we're building an awareness practice, we have to come down into the body. So in Buddhism we talk about six senses. So that's the five physical senses of touch, taste, hearing, sight, sound. And then the sixth sense in Buddhism is the mind. So we're trying to get a balance of these senses. And predominantly we live in our minds, we live in our thoughts. We think our thoughts are facts, which they're not, they're just thoughts. And we live in our minds. So in mindfulness practice, we're not only trying to become a bigger container, but we're also trying to come into a more direct awareness of all of our senses. Which is why we do the body scans and the breath. because we're trying to come into a more direct awareness of the body and the other senses, which help us hold. So awareness of the body and awareness of the breath help us hold what is going on in the sense of the mind. Yeah? And they're connected, aren't they? Like, I'm talking about them as if they're separate. But actually, we all know that if we're having a thought about something that's painful, it's difficult, there's going to be a resonance in the body. If we're having a pleasant thought, there will also be a resonance in the body. But we're learning in mindfulness to unhook from the thought and come into the body. Yeah? And this is what we integrate around. We integrate around coming into the body and the breath. So we use that to kind of help us integrate. So the image I like to use here is one of like our being as a muddy pool. Like a muddy puddle. We've seen quite a lot of puddles recently. You know, and they're muddy, aren't they, often? They're all stirred up. But isn't it beautiful on that winter's day where that puddle has settled and you can see the reflection of the sky in the puddle and the clouds? So we're using the body and the breath as a tool to integrate, yeah, to help our mind settle and to come into a kind of more still, stable awareness of ourselves. Yeah, so we're trying to develop a more integrated awareness, an awareness that can help hold those things. So when we're able to rest in the body or rest with the breath, we can start to work on our relationship with the mind. So in meditation, when we can rest in the body and the breath, of course the thoughts, they're still happening, aren't they? Yeah, we find ourselves of thinking about that conversation we had with our boss last week that was difficult, or we find ourselves worrying about that email we haven't sent yet, or that thing we haven't planned yet, yeah? Because that's what the mind does. The mind is this kind of problem-solving computer. It's trying to make it all alright. Except we can't make it all alright, so it doesn't quite work, really. So that happens, and then we use the body and the breath as a way of coming back to the senses and just watching the mind. So in meditation and through the practice of integration, we're trying to fundamentally change our relationship with our bodies and our minds. So it's not that we're trying to create a certain thing. Yeah, we're not trying to create, there's not like a certain thing. Well, it's not like we can do something and it's done, tick. It's more like we're trying to develop an attitude of being with ourselves in a certain kind of way, yeah? Which is more integrated. And that's a way of being with ourselves where we're open and we're kind to whatever's happening. So I think in order to have an integrated awareness, it's about developing these kind of qualities or attitudes of openness, awareness and kindness. And like, we have two practices, don't we? The mindfulness of breathing and the metta-bhavana, loving kindness meditation. But actually the breath is full of kindness. And if your breath isn't full of kindness, well, that's something to look at. The breath can be full of kindness. Yeah, the breath can be full of kindness. So we use this breath as a way of bringing our awareness to ourselves, yeah, to our bodies and to our minds. And to coming into a relationship with the body, to becoming more embodied. So that's why we have the stress on embodiment and body scans and coming into the body. Is because coming into the body and becoming embodied is a necessary balance to helping us work with our minds. Yeah? And that the mind and the body are so connected. So it's a false dualism. So in order to deepen our relationship with our mind, we have to deepen our relationship with our bodies. So it does mean coming into dialogue with all the different parts of ourselves. This is a language I quite enjoy. It comes from the focusing tradition, but irrelevant of whether you ever do any focusing or not, it's a language I quite enjoy. So talking about different parts of ourselves. That might sound quite disintegrating to have lots of different parts. But as I said, the reality of integration is bringing together all the different parts, and we do have different parts of ourselves. So I might, you know, I might come into relationship with myself, like right now, and I might come into relationship with the part of myself that's feeling quite tender or sore around my chest, and that might have a kind of feeling of sadness or tenderness connected to it, and that might bring up memories or whatever that brings. But then, and being with that, I might notice there's another part of myself that feels frustrated that I'm feeling tender and sore and feels like I should be more dynamic and energetic and inspired and bright and shiny, right? So they're both different parts of me. It's not like one's right and one's wrong. Yeah, they're just different parts. And actually, there's something about being able to say, oh yeah, I'm hearing that tender part, and I'm also hearing this part that's a bit frustrated that it feels like that right now. I don't need to negate either part of myself, yeah? They're both just how it is. So we can use this language, yeah? We can use this language to just very calmly just be with whatever's happening. And we're trying to create a container where we can be with anything. And that's a challenge, yeah? But that's what we're trying to do. And sometimes we need to just step back, because parts of ourselves become a bit overwhelming. And you're like, okay, I'm noticing I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed by that right now. Okay. I can just feel my feet on the ground, and I can just come back to the body, and come back to the breath. Yeah, so this is all the process of integration. I hope it's making sense, okay? So that's mindfulness, a bit of how mindfulness helps us to become more integrated. The other thing I want to just touch on is, I was on a retreat on integration early in the year that was led by Vasantra, and I was really struck by something he was saying, which is that when we practice integration, we need something to integrate around. So he was very much using this image of integration as a mandala. So a mandala is this, these kind of, you can often, I meant to bring a picture actually, but it's often concentric circles, yeah, with whatever is most important at the centre of the mandala, and then other things in our lives surrounding that, what's most important at the centre, and then other things surrounding that. So he was saying, you know, we need, when we're integrating, we need to try and be as aware as we can of what it is we're integrating around. So what it is we put at the centre is what we serve, yeah? So what is it that you put at the centre of your life? Because what you put at your centre of your life, that could be a thing, an activity, but it could be a quality. Then whatever that is what we then integrate around. So it could be a central focus like that. But another way of thinking about this is around, well, what are your sources of inspiration and motivation? Yeah? So we need something to integrate around. So if we're aware of what our sources of integration and motivation are, then we can integrate around those sources of inspiration. So I think this central focus, you could think about it in three ways, depending on what your heart most resonates with, if it resonates with any of these things, right? So you could think about it as like in terms of what qualities you're resonating. I don't know if these things are different. There's just different ways into the same thing. So it could be qualities. So for me, the qualities that I integrate around, or the qualities that are most important to me, are a sense of connecting with the earth, being grounded, being open and upright, and being loving. Yeah. So they're probably the, I'd say the qualities that feel most important to me, most resonant to me, and the qualities that I'm trying to resonate around. Now, I connect those back to the Buddha. You don't have to connect to the Buddha or Bodhisattva, but if you do, it's another way of thinking about it. So I connect that back to the Buddha in the terms of, you know, the Buddha sat there in meditation under the tree. He's, you know, he's enlightened, and he's the Buddha. He's, you know, he's touching the earth of his own experience. He's connected deeply with the ground and with the tree and with the earth. He's strong. He's upright. And he's gold. Yeah, he's shining this kind of golden light. Yeah, it's love. This compassion. This goldness out into the world. So for me, to sit at the centre of my mandala with the Buddha is to sit with those qualities of groundedness and love and goldenness, and to try and imbibe those in myself in connection, and the Buddha being a source of that for me. Yeah? So that is one way of me talking about the centre of my mandala. That's also for me the source of my inspiration, in a way. The Buddha is a source of my inspiration, and I'm inspired by trying to be as loving as I can be. Yeah? So for me, like, that's a real touchstone of my practice. You know, this epitaph by the Buddha of hatred does not cease by hatred, it ceases by love. This is the eternal law. Yeah? So that is, for me, it's a touchstone of my practice. It's what I'm trying to do. Is trying to transform hatred into love. And that's love. So transform a loving, what I'm really trying to develop and transform, to have a loving attitude to whatever's happening. So it might be having a loving attitude to my own hatred. But that's better than a hating attitude to my own hatred, yeah? Or just acting out my attitude to my own hatred. So it's developed, you know, for me, that sense of love and groundedness is what I hold at the centre, and it's what inspires me, and it's the qualities that I'm moving towards, and it's what motivates me. Yeah, it's what motivates me. So sometimes when we come into relationship with our sources of inspiration, what we also notice is that doubt arises. Yeah. So we come into relationship with these things that we feel inspired and motivated by, these qualities, and then doubt arises. That's normal. Totally normal. Yeah, when I'm feeling at my most inspired is also when I'm normally working most strongly with doubt. Yeah, so they often come together. It's these, like, these different parts of ourselves I was talking about. So if you suddenly find yourself in the grip of a lot of doubt, you're not doing anything wrong. It's just doubts arising. That's okay. So let's listen to that doubt. So in a way, this afternoon and today, it's really us trying to explore, I think, this sense of, what is it like to be integrated? Yeah. What is it like to be integrated? What helps you to be integrated? That's really important. What helps you practice mindfulness? What is the centre of your mandala? So what qualities, or what inspiration, or what motivation are you putting at the heart of things around which you're integrating? Yeah? So it's us knowing that, knowing what the thing is that we're putting at the heart, what's inspiring us, what's motivating us, what's helping us be more aware, what's helping us be this bigger container. And it's knowing, yeah, what are the conditions in our life that are supporting us to do that. So the Buddha is really clear, everything arises based on conditions. So things don't arrive in the abstract, they arise based upon conditions. And sometimes we can put what we think are the perfect conditions in place, and what we want doesn't arise. And sometimes we're in the worst ever conditions, and we find ourselves full of faith and full of love. So it's also a bit random, yeah? But conditions matter. And we do need to know what conditions help us, what conditions support us to feel aware, to feel inspired. And we need to manifest those conditions in our life. So for me, it's quite simple actually. Like, I know that being with spiritual friends helps me stay in touch with what inspires me. I know going on retreat regularly keeps me in touch with what inspires me. And I know being here, being around people and having to communicate about the Dharma, it also helps me be in touch with what inspires me. So it might be different for you. You might not be able to get on retreat and you might not be able to spend much time here. But whatever the conditions of your life, it's important to know, isn't it? What are the conditions that are going to support us? And what is most truly important to us? What is at the centre around which we're going to integrate? What's going to help us become that bigger container to be with all the different parts of ourselves?